Hey guys, welcome back to our podcast, A Court of Heaven and Hell. I'm Lauren, aka Heaven.
And I'm Ellie, I'm also known as Hell.
If you don't already know, we are a book podcast that focuses on different romantasy series and novels, and we are currently focusing on the Court of Thorns and Roses series by Sarah J. Maas. And this episode, we will be continuing our coverage of A Court of Mist and Fury with chapters 39 through 45. The episode structure will include plot coverage, character discussions, foreshadowing and world building, as well as our theories and Maas-verse connections for other books in this series. So this episode will contain spoilers, but you will be safe as long as you have read all of the books in the ACOTAR series. You can stay with us until we get to our last portion, where we will be discussing her other series, including the newly released House of Flame and Shadows. So again, you are safe if you have read all of ACOTAR. If not, save this video and come back and join us when you're done.
We also want to give y'all a content and trigger warning. Please see our show notes for that information. Also, make sure to check out our past episodes where we deep dive into the rest of the Sarah J. Maas universe. We have several episodes out now about all three Crescent City books, the first ACOTAR book, and we're on Court of Mist and Fury, as y'all know. Also, please take some time to rate and review us, or if you're watching us on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe, and let us know your comments and the thoughts below. Now let's get into the plot of Mist and Fury.
Let's do it.
Okay. Side note, these chapters, not many, but a lot happens in them. So buckle up, because this might be a longer episode than usual. Okay?
Yeah, y'all, not even being funny. It's only six chapters, but holy shit, are they juicy.
Yeah.
Okay?
We got the Queens, we got the Hidden City, we have Starfall. Okay? A lot happens. All right, starting with chapter 39, we start off with Feyre visiting Amryn in her apartment to check on the progress of decoding the Book of Breathings. She brings Amryn her favorite treat, which is lamb's blood. She notices that Amryn is using her blood ruby as a paperweight and acting very casual about it. She says she didn't go destroy Adriata because Varian sent her a necklace and she can't tell if he hates her or wants her. Ooh. Is still training with Cassian in the mornings, and she has worked her way up to wielding an Illyrian blade. At night, she trains her powers with Rhysand. Rhysand has sent multiple letters to the mortal queens with still no response. When Rhysand is gone to do court business, him and Feyre still write notes to each other. She finds that she is very much enjoying him. She learns from him that he wanted to be a different type of High Lord than his father, and one that actually protects his people. Finally, she gets a message from him saying that the queens have written back, and that training with Cassian is canceled that morning because they're going to go meet them. They arrive at the Archeron estate where Nesta and Elaine are ready. The inner circle, except Amryn, are also there. The queens have two requests. To know the entire layout of the house, so Nesta and Elaine helped Azriel with that information, and that the meeting was to start at 11 a.m. sharp. 11 strikes the clock, and the queens surprisingly winnow in. Chapter 40, the queens arrive, and they are a mix of old and young, beautiful and not beautiful. The sixth queen did not come, however. They recognize Mor as the Morgan from the war, and looks like they are in fear of her presence. They all sit and Rhysand tells them why he called them here. War is coming, but the queens already know and they have been prepping for it. They are not interested in defending the land where the Archerons grew up. One of the queens says, if they have to sacrifice one tiny territory for the majority of the continent, then that is what they will do. Rhysand tells them that together they can save all the people, and the main queen says she has heard of the tyrant that Rhysand is and how he kills innocents all the time. Feyre says if they won't help defend that land, then they need the other half of the Book of Breathings. The queens respond, no, it will never leave our walls. Feyre gives them a background of how she became High Fae because of the King of Highburn and how he will destroy them all with the power of the cauldron. Mor steps in and says their ancestors who fought in the war with her would be ashamed of them for not helping. She tells them Mirian and Draken are still alive on an island hidden to the world with both Fae and humans coexisting together. The queens then say they require proof that Rhysand is not the evil High Lord they believe, and he says he will bring them proof.
Okay. Makes me so nervous.
Chapter 41, with the inner circle winnowed all the way back to Valaris, Amryn is there waiting and asks how it went. The humans need proof of Rhysand's good intentions. Feyre asks who Mirian and Draken are. I am going to give a big analysis to them in the world building section. So stay tuned for that. Now, Moore did mention to the queens about Draken and Meriem, but Rhysand doesn't want to tell them any more about them because their friends have fought for the peace and doesn't want to involve them. Rhysand says the only way to gain their trust is to show them Velaris. His plan is not to bring them there themselves, but just to show them a glimpse of it. He tells Moore to get ready because they're going to go visit her father in the Court of Nightmares. Rhysand needs the Veritas, an orb that is in Moore's family that has truth magic, but it is heavily guarded. Good thing Asriel is part of the inner circle. He's our spy master. The group breaks up to get ready for tomorrow. Faber goes for a walk to the Rainbow of Velaris, then comes back to the townhouse where Rhysand tells her that he is debating on having her stay tomorrow because he doesn't want her to see how he is in the Court of Nightmares. Faber wants to go and says she trusts him, even knowing that she will have to play a part too. She asks why Moore looks really shook up after being told they are going to go see her father. Rhysand tells her that he was there the day that Moore's father sold her to be wed to Aerys, the son of the High Lord of the Autumn Court. He has a reputation of being very cruel. Moore begged to not let that happen. Rhysand took her to the Lyrian camps for a few days to get away, and when she saw Cassian, she knew how to get out of the engagement and how to ruin her value to those people. She ended up sleeping with Cassian, and Aerys, as planned, refused to marry her. Her family dumped Moore on an Autumn Court border with a note nailed to her body that she's Aerys' problem. Aerys left her for dead, and Asriel is the one who found her. Feyre is furious that Moore had to go through to that and says to him, quote, "Tell me what I have to do tomorrow."
All right, guys, get ready. We are at the juicy chapter 42. The gang is on the way to the Hewn City and Feyre is flying with Rhys. She can tell that he's feeling down and resorts to some sexually charged rhetoric to bring him back up. The talk of wingspans and interesting positions is cut short when an ash arrow almost knocks them from the sky. Rhys immediately descends to find the culprit and demands Feyre be winnowed to the Hewn City. Feyre, however, is done waiting around and has different plans. With Rhys's blessing and an hour before their meeting, she joins Az on the ground while Cassian and Rhys take to the skies. After some searching, they haven't found anything and are only left with more questions. With time having run out, Moore helps Feyre prepare for the Hewn City. Moore dresses her in very similar attire to what she spent her nights in under the mountain. However, these are black and glitter with every move. Another big difference is the diadem atop her head that seems to accompany a lot of her outfits now. Wonder what that's about. Entering the city and taking in its cruel beauty and people, Feyre notes that Under the Mountain had been a poor recreation of this evil, if not incredible, city. They make their way to the throne to await Rhys's arrival, and boy, does he arrive. Feyre immediately feels Rhys's presence and says the building shakes with his unleashed power. Before Rhys enters, Az and Cass make their entrance decked out in their complete Illyrian armor, complete with 7 siphons each. Rhys follows shortly clad in all black and a crown of stars upon his head. Addressing the bowing crowd, unimpressed, he walks to Feyre and welcomes her to his court, commanding her to come to the throne with him. Feyre obeys, really playing up her role as the demure, obedient pet she's portraying. After some baiting with Feyre, baiting I think she may be more than a little into, Rhys allows the crowd to rise and continue their festivities with the exception of Kyr, Morgan's father and the interim ruler of the Court of Nightmares. Kyr gives Rhys the reports on the courts while Rhys keeps playing with Feyre. At this point, something shifts and it becomes obvious Feyre is more than a little into the game that he's playing. She knows all eyes are on her, but damn me if she does not give a fuck. All she can focus on is her and the Lord of Darkness. Rhys sends Kyr to get Feyre wine as a task well beneath him while continuing his performance with her. Even though secretly, or not so secretly, enjoying herself, Feyre sees that Rhys does not like having to be this person, but there's nothing of himself he wouldn't sacrifice for his people. She tells him down their bond that this side of him doesn't scare her, and she knows he's truly a good male. After the compliment, shit really heats up, and letting go of all thoughts, Feyre begins dancing on him to the music, almost setting herself ablaze. Rhys has to literally stop her. And this is when we're all reminded that they're just supposed to be distracting the court while Az steals the orb. At this point, they both make eye contact with Kira, making him watch as they continue their exploration of each other until Az makes it back, signaling that he got it. Finally, Rhys spares Kira, beckoning him over and distracting him by asking if it's poisoned while Feyre makes her way through the crowd to Cassian. As she does, Kira finds a boldness not possessed by many and quietly tells her, "You'll get what's coming to you, whore." Whoops. Rhysand heard, and he is not happy. Night fills the room before clearing with Kira on his knees. Rhys demands he apologize to Feyre. At first refusing, Rhys casually breaks his arm in four places and disintegrates his elbow. At this, he begrudgingly, but Rhys isn't done, breaking him a little more and telling him he can't see a healer when he wakes. If he does, he will not like the results. The true Lord of Nightmares has made his appearance. Feyre, completely unfazed by the entire scene, can only focus on the feelings that have been awakened in her at Rhysand's touch. And boy, is she in trouble. Chapter 43. After leaving the Court of Nightmares, Rhys winnows Feyre to a lake while the rest of the crew goes elsewhere. He apologizes to her for his actions at the court, saying he shouldn't have let her see this side of him. Feyre, hearing this, immediately feels the sense of entrapment she's experienced with Tamlin and says she doesn't want Rhys to protect her like that. It's starting to seem like something deeper could be going on when Rhys boldly states he'll kill anyone who harms Feyre. She understands his need to protect the people he cares about, but she expresses that she doesn't want to stop being included just because she may be in danger. Angry at this, because he feels like he's being compared to Tam, Rhys says he would never lock her up and to stop comparing them. Rhys declares he knows how stories get written, and in this one, he will be the evil monster who stole her away from the Golden Prince. Feyre makes it known that what she wants should matter, but Rhys calls her out for not even knowing what she wants. Feyre then uses Rhys's own confession to her against him, calling him out for being afraid to show even his real friends who he is for the fear of rejection by them. Even Feyre knows she took it a step too far. Back at the townhouse, Feyre leaves Rhys with the inner circle and goes to the garden, hoping he will follow her later so she can admit her true feelings. It wouldn't be easy, but she thinks she wants to try with Rhys if he's willing. He never shows up. The next day, Rhys isn't around and won't even communicate with Feyre through their secret messages. Upset by this, Feyre walks into town to visit Amarin and burn some energy. Once there, Amarin points her out as the reason that Rhys snapped at her that morning. Amarin reveals he's gone off to hunt whoever shot at them the night before and that Feyre and the rest of the Inner Circle are going to be stationed at one of the Illyrian war camps in 2 days to await word from the Queens. The only reason they aren't going right away is due to Starfall, a celebration special to the Night Court. Feyre leaves after that, but not before Amarin credits her for the changes that she's seen in Rhysand. When he first returned from under the mountain, he was a ghost, but she has made him better. Feyre says he's just lucky to have the Inner Circle. She replies that it is they who are lucky to have a dreamer like him for a High Lord. Back at the townhouse, Feyre attempts to reach out to Rhys again with no luck. She writes one final angry message before taking a bath. This one actually vanishes, but gets no response, and so she prepares for Star. All right, two chapters left. Chapter 44. Dressed for the event, Feyre takes herself in and is surprised by how she looks. She's in a stunning dress, and she has filled out quite significantly. She meets Cass on the roof, and after complimenting her, he flies her to the House of Wind. Mor is there and comes to talk to Feyre. Feyre notes the way Az stares at Mor and takes the opportunity to ask her about her history with Cassian. Mor tells her the truth, but is interrupted when Rhys comes up, telling Feyre she looks like a woman again. Feyre is hesitant at first, and Rhys tells her he just needed some space after their argument. And she moves on by asking him to explain what Starfall is. Rhys points to the ceiling when the magic begins to occur. One after another, stars seem to shoot across the sky until it's thousands of them all at once. Feyre takes in the celebration of joyous music and dancing and many stars streaming across the sky, seeming to get closer and closer. At this point, Rhys pulls Feyre away, saying there's a better view where it's quieter. Alone on a small balcony, they say their apologies to one another. Rhys tells Feyre a little more about Starfall and reveals the cruel way Amarantha would make him service her every year on that night, knowing what it meant to him. Feyre, trying to comfort him and possibly get closer to him, strokes his finger. But as she goes to turn fully towards him, she gets smacked in the face by a star spirit. Rhys immediately breaks into laughter at her until he also gets smacked in the face by one. Now it's Feyre's turn to cackle before she takes his hand in hers and draws one of the spears. Rhys smiles at her and she returns it. Taken aback, he asks her to do it again. And realizing she never had and how much he's done for her, she gives him her unrestrained smile. Feyre claims two questions from Rhys, and he tells her he hid from her the last few days because he was scared she'd throw him out on his ass, and that he wishes he could take back their kiss from under the mountain. He knows he was jealous and angry and didn't make it pleasant for her. Feyre thinks that discussion is dangerous territory, but then realizes that it's just the truth and that she hasn't experienced that kind of honesty with anyone before. Feyre asks Rhys to dance with her, telling him she wants them to go join the festivities where they belong. He gives her a kiss on the cheek, telling her he's happy that he met her. Finally, we're in chapter 45, another big one with a lot I'll touch more on later. But the following day, they are in the camp and Feyre reminisces on a night well spent with her and Rhys dancing and drinking with friends and then each other before Rhys flew her home at sunrise. Feyre is finally admitting she wants Rhys, but is also struggling with the feeling she's a traitor for it. They are met at the camp by Lord Devlin, and his disdain for them is obvious. Rhys explains they will be staying for a time and to prepare his mother's house for them. He also asks him about the women who are supposed to be training. Devlin asks about Feyre, and he claims her as his, which makes Feyre's little heart flutter. Rhys asks Mor and Cass not to cause any problems before heading off to train with Feyre. Once in the clearing, Feyre is plagued with questions. She asks about the Illyrian war customs and the training of the women. Rhys explains that he has been trying to get them to allow women to train for years, but it is an uphill battle, and the ones who do are made miserable and often leave. Feyre only has more questions, so Rhys agrees to answer them if she's able to use her magic. They go back and forth with Rhys answering her questions about the Bloodrite and Tamlin and their family history. We learn that they were friends and Rhys actually helped train him, but his father and brothers were evil and Tamlin did nothing to stand against them. He even betrayed Rhys by telling them where he would be the day his mother and sister were killed. Rhys wasn't there since he decided to stay and train a unit he was working with, but Tamlin's father still slayed his mother and sister. In retaliation, Rhys and his father went to the Spring Court, and while Rhys tortured, then killed Tamlin's brothers, his father had killed Tamlin's father and mother, even though he had promised Rhys he would spare the latter. Tired of the killing, Rhys attempted to stop his father before he killed Tamlin. Going to his room to do it anyways, Tamlin was able to kill him in one strike. They both watched the power pass onto each other, and Rhys fled. The harrowing story brings Feyre pain, and she is able to wield all of her powers seamlessly, finally acknowledging that they belong to her and not to the High Lords. She is disgusted that she loved the man who did this to Rhys, but he tells her it's not her fault. All of these revelations bring Feyre to a place where she's ready to paint again, and she wants to paint Rhys. They leave the clearing with her telling him this and him suggesting it should be a nude painting.
All right, y'all. We have finished with our chapter summaries. It was a long one, okay?
A lot going on.
A lot happened. So we're going to start our character discussions, starting with some side characters. I'm going to go ahead and bring up Cassian. Got to bring up my boo. We learned that him and Mor slept together so that she was no longer a virgin and able to be sold off by her family, because her family comes from a shitty place where they sell off women, yeah, like their property, and her we're not.
Her family is shit in general.
Yeah, I can't. So we learned that they slept together to help out Mor. I'm sure Cassian also enjoyed it. He gets called a lone-born bastard by Aerys, And he also gets called a dog by the Illyrian lords. He gets called a lot of names throughout the series. They just don't like bastards or people who are Illyrians. I don't know.
It's the fact that he's like lowborn. They don't understand why somebody like him has so much power. And rightfully, he's feared by a lot of people. Every time they describe him, they'll be like, oh, Cassian grinned at them and they paled. They were instantly scared, like what it would mean to have to fight him. So people know that he's a badass. But I think the fact that he is such a badass and he's not even High Fae is what makes the High Fae have such disdain for him. But I love Cassian. He's such an oxymoron because he is so powerful, but he's also just a big goofball and like just so sweet and sunshine. So yeah. We love
really
that for
him. The sunshine. I love a grumpy sunshine duo, so that's why I'm obsessed with him.
He has a few moments later in the series, but for the most part, he's super sweet.
Yes. And then talking about more, we obviously just mentioned a little bit more of her backstory. I do want to point out that in Silver Flames, we get like a little bit of a different story from Arish. He was saying something along the lines of, she didn't really tell you what happened that day with me. So for me, I'm thinking that maybe there's something between them that they agreed on. I don't know. I'm very curious to hear about what that's going to end up being, because I don't understand, but I need to know the answer to it.
Yeah, I'm very curious about that whole situation, because clearly she was left there with the note nailed to her. Clearly he found her, but the question is, what happened? Who's telling the truth? Eris hasn't really said what happened. He's just, what she's allowed you to believe isn't the truth. So I'm just very curious about that. What fucking happened that day? What really happened? So
I hope we find out in the next book.
Me too.
Silver Flames made Eris seem, maybe he isn't a bad guy. So I'm like, okay, but I don't really want to like him, to be honest. But I don't know. I'm keeping my mind open.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't have an issue liking him if he's not actually an asshole. I did like him in Silver Flames. He did get mad about the whole Nesta thing, but they did trick him, dangled her like a carrot in front of him. I get why he may be upset about that. But I don't know. I do like Eris. He seems pretty level-headed. He seems like he's playing a bigger game. And I would much rather see him be High Lord of the Autumn Court than Baron. So I'm like,
oh, for sure.
Let him step up. Let him be in charge. Kill off Baron. When the Lucian's mom can go back to Helion, and then, oh my god.
Oh, that better be that ending.
I would love that.
A meme that was saying Eris is in his Rhysan under the mountain phase, where maybe he isn't actually a villain and he's putting on a front. And I'm like, okay, I could see that. But I will say, if he did leave more, I would be like, about him, but maybe he contacted Asriel and was like, hey, I need you to come pick her up. Don't make it look like I helped, though. I don't know, because Asriel is the one who did find Mor on the Autumn Court border, and he seems to just be so protective of Mor. Obviously, at this point, we know that he has feelings for her, but we learn a little bit more down the line where that's not going to happen, but yeah.
I know. That would make me look at Az sideways if he knew this whole time and didn't say anything too. I don't know. I'm like, so many secrets. Like, every time you think you know what's going on, it's nah, man. It's secrets and lies up in this bitch. I don't know what the truth is, so we'll see.
I don't know either. And Girly Pop's supposed to be a freaking truth, like,
she's like, I am the Morrigan. My power is truth. Hear these words is true. It's, have you told the truth about anything?
And I'm also like, Asriel, your literal blade is called Truth Teller. I just need to know, like, what the fuck does this mean?
Interesting.
I just thought of that.
I know. Ooh, wait a second. Why have I never put those two things together? They're not mates, but what? I don't know. I'm very curious about that now. Like, maybe truth is subjective. Maybe they're both good examples of that. I don't know.
They're not very truthful to each other. So moving on to another character in the inner circle, Amryn. She has a little teeny tiny apartment because she doesn't like to have guests over, which I really feel. And she is way more reserved than the others in the inner circle. She is like the little introvert. I'm going to stay in the corner. I'm going to drink my blood, let y'all talk. Her and Asriel are really like the only people in the inner circle at the moment who are very introverted. Mor and Cassian are very extroverted. Like, in your face. Hey, you want some wine? Hey, you want to go trade? That's her vibe.
Yeah, no, for real. That's so accurate. They get 2 and 2. Amryn and Az are like the quiet. You don't really know. They got a lot of secrets. Then Mor and Cass are like the outgoing, extroverted. Let's go dancing. Let's get drinks. Let's party it up. Let's destroy a city and then try to get invited back. And then Rhys and Faber are like the same fucking person. Male and female flips. So I don't. They're like right in the middle of both of those situations. So, which is interesting.
Yes. Okay. So also with Amryn at this point, we learned that Varian sent her a little gift to try to convince her to not burn down his city. And she's questioning, does he like me? Does he not like me? Obviously he fucking likes her. And she likes him too. He's probably just really scared of her, which fair, I would also be scared of her, but I love scary women, so I understand the appeal.
Yeah, I would probably think that of the people that we've met so far, Amryn is definitely the most intimidating. It's also a big question of, we know she's powerful as fuck, but we just don't know exactly how fucking powerful. And so, yeah, I'd probably be a little bit nervous too. And she's not trying to put on like an air. She's, no, I will fucking burn the shit out of you. I'll burn you to the ground. I don't give a fuck about you. Like, so yeah, I'd be scared too.
Period. I'm more scared of her. I would rather be in a room with Rhysand than her, not knowing them.
Yeah, me too.
Because I'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, this bitch drinks blood and has like silver eyes and she's gleaming into my soul.
And she clearly just doesn't. Like, social cues are not her thing. Rhysand is at least charismatic. He's gonna have a conversation with you if you're in the same room with each other. He's gonna at least be polite. Amryn doesn't give a fuck. Amryn's not gonna say hello to you. Like, you're just gonna stand there and be like,
she's like probably one of those people stands super close to you and just
yeah, exactly,
stares at you. You're like, okay,
don't talk.
Sniffs you. Doesn't she literally sniffs like Pharaoh when she first meets her or some shit?
I think so.
Smelling the mating bond. That's probably why.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I love her. She's like a
type. Too, I love her. She just seems like the type of person who's just, you smell fucking weird. I don't know.
She would say that. She would 1000% say that.
So since Amryn is like super scary bitch, but like a slay, also want to mention that in the span of chapter, she says, quote, I'll take goat too. The blood's pure, richer. Reminds me of another time and another place. I'm just saying, if you haven't listened to our past two episodes where we talk a lot about Amryn and our theories on her, you should go listen to them because this really ties in to her vibe and what's going on, especially another time and another place.
Yeah, we literally know she's not of this world, and I'm assuming she's old as a fuck. Like, she was around when Theon and all of them were around 15,000 years ago, and she was already old then. Nobody knows how old she is, but she's been around the block a few times. So yeah, definitely a lot of questions about her too, but interesting. Moving on to the main characters of this whole shindig right now. Pharaoh and Rhys. Boy, oh boy, are they having a good time in this stretch of chapters, you guys. Like, this is where the magic is happening. Pharaoh finally comes to the conclusion in these chapters that she likes Rhysi, okay? She's all about our boy Rhysi, but she just cannot say the words out loud for whatever reason. The sexual awakening this bitch has on the throne while she is dancing on Rhysand is something else, let me tell you. Those chapters are a spicy, okay? And honestly, like, low-key, that kind of shit, that kind of like slow tension, like not really going all the way, but definitely I can feel both of these. The whole time I'm just like, whoa, I don't know why, but I'm all about that shit. Will they, won't they? Like this is dirty too. They're like in front of a bunch of people. Like, people are watching. Pharaoh's, at first she's all playing along and then she starts getting real into it and she forgets herself for a second. And even Rhys is like, showing signs that he's really enjoying himself. Yes, girl. I love this chapter. I know that a lot of you love this chapter. It is a good one. Yes, please move on from Tamlin. I feel like a traitor. Bitch, you're not a traitor, dude. You broke up with him. You wrote his ass a letter. You should have broke up with him before the wedding and all that shit even happened. He didn't deserve to be with you in the first place. Should have broke up with his ass as soon as you left under the mountain, and he didn't do shit to help you after you saved his people. You definitely should have fucking broke up with him when you found out that the whole thing was orchestrated and that he had you kill that wolf in the forest in the first goddamn place and then came to your house, kidnapped you, took you from everything you've ever known. But I digress. Okay, it's time to move on. All right, Reese is here and he's here to stay. Now, I will say Reese has not been perfect up until this point, but it's okay if you're starting to like somebody else. And it's not like you just literally jumped from one man to the next. There has been some time here. You have come to terms with the fact that you don't want to be with Tamlin. You don't want the kind of life that he was offering you. And that's okay. Embrace it. Embrace Reese, okay? Please. I'm getting tired of it, okay? I just need y'all to, okay? All that being said, she is still a little traumatized from her experience with Tamlin, too.
Me too.
Yeah, I was going to say same girl. Same. All right. But Reese, Reesey boy. The Lord of Darkness, the King of Night, whatever the hell you want to call his sexy ass, okay? He has some moments here. He has a, like, I will kill anyone who touches you, like, moment. Oh,
period.
I love that for her, okay? Please. I'd be like, Tim. She was all freaking out. Like, I'd have been like, anyone?
Tamlin? Anyone? You go take care of him for me?
There's a few bitches. There's a few bitches in this world that could.
Ianthe? Go ahead. Go ahead.
Get her out here, okay? Like, anyone? Okay. And then it's clear at this point that, like, he's in love with Feyre. All right? He's in love with Feyre. We know that now, looking back. We know he's been in love with Feyre for a minute. But she's also in love with him, guys. She admits to herself that she is willing to try. Despite all odds, despite thinking that they're not supposed to be together, that it's wrong for her to like him, she's, if he's down, then I'm at least willing to try. Because she likes him too. And it is so tough to see them basically having this miscommunication in this stretch of chapters of, they both know that they want to be together, but they just can't say it for some reason. They're like, they're right there. Come on, bro. You're not experiencing the kind of heat that they were experiencing in the Hewn City if y'all are not into each other, okay? Performances only go so far. Y'all were really selling it, all right? This is gross, but they were like, the people could smell it, okay? It was, the pheromones were in the fucking air, all right? Like, y'all were not faked in the funk. So let's just go ahead and admit to each other that, like, hey, I like you. Oh, I like you too. Hey, do you want to go on a date? A real date? Like, y'all have been on a ton of dates with each other. Y'all have been living together for months now and trying to pretend like it's not the case because sometimes people come and go. Come on, bro. Like, she's seen you bare, naked, kneeling over her. Okay? Like, you've seen her all but bare naked and two pieces of curtain draped over her body, like, while she's dancing on you. Like, come on, man. Let's just bump uglies and get this over with. Definitely ready for them to come together. Okay? Now, other traits about Reese that I just want to point out is just what a good leader he is. He is truly beloved by the people in his inner circle and his court. The people love him. He is such a good guy. Obviously, it's so sad to hear what the human queens think about him and what other people in the world think about him, what he thinks about himself, like saying that he's the villain in the story, that he's the one who steals the girl and Golden Prince, like from the Golden Prince, and he sees himself as this evil villain while Tamlin's this golden whatever. I'm like, bro, come on. It's literally reversed. But I do love that writing style, that's how she chose to do that. He's such a good guy, such a good leader. He's beloved by the people who count on him. And that's how you know that this guy's actually good. Even Feyre sees it, despite everything that they've been through together. She sees, like, the good is outweighing the bad. He's harder on himself than anybody else is going to be on him. And Feyre just says this cute little line, like, when she's talking to Amarin, and Amarin is talking about how they're lucky to have him. And she's, I forgot to tell him that he thinks he's the villain, but usually the villain is the one who locks the princess away, and he's the one who saved her. And I'm just like, oh, that's such a cute little line that just puts it all into perspective. Yeah, Tamlin's the fucking villain, okay? And Reese is the prince. It doesn't have to be a golden prince.
Yeah, I still hate Tamlin. I'm sorry. Sorry, y'all. Not getting any better.
I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry. Fuck Tamlin.
Okay, fuck Tamlin. Not even, like, to mention with Rhysand that, okay, when I was reading this for the first time, I was like, what the fuck do you mean that you're going to tell him about Valoris? I was so scared. And rightfully scared because obviously it ended up not being a great idea. Oh! I'm like, no, these bitches, these queen bitches suck ass.
Dude.
I can't. And then he was like, I would have to show him Velaris. I was like, the city that has been protected for centuries. Oh my God. I was like, I'm going to freak out. I'm going to freak the fuck out. And obviously, the queens are full on bitches. And they're aligned with Hybern. I can't. And they give Hybern the fucking information about Velaris and they go and attack it. I just can't.
Okay. I hate them. Anyway. I hate them. Rereading this, it was so hard to like not be like, don't do it, don't do it. I was like in the book, I was like, don't do it, don't do it. Like,
maybe if I reread it again, it'll change. The story's gonna change. I'm like, no, it doesn't. It doesn't change.
I know everything ends up being okay, but it's just, oh, why did you put your people and your city at risk? I know you love them so much, and it's just so sad to see these bitches take advantage of them. I hate the human queens. I hate them. From the moment they enter the story, I'm just like, oh, these bitches suck. They suck.
Yeah, and they literally are still villains until Silver Flames.
Yeah.
Well, I don't even think all of them have died yet, but it's just like that one main bitch.
Ooh, oh, yeah.
Talk about later. But
we do know Bri Allen ends up being, but yeah.
Fuck her.
She's like the really pretty one that, like, she was
ends
like,
up ugly.
Yeah.
She gets mad at Nesta. She's like, I'm ugly because of you. Bitch,
let's talk about taking accountability. Accountability is the word of the fucking day, bitch.
Sorry that I got thrown into a cauldron and I decided to take its own power because I'm a baddie and you ended up ugly.
And you got what you deserved. Now your outside matches your inside, ho.
Period.
I can't. Like, ugh, I hated them. I hated them. And it's just, it is so interesting that in the first ACOTAR, we get all of this story from Feyre about how the Fae are these evil beings and they're the worst and they've done all this fucked up shit. And it's true. It is true. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like the Fae are without fault. They have definitely done some evil stuff. But it is really interesting to see like the shoe on the other foot now where it's now you're in Fae territory and you're trying to save humankind and these fucking bitches are showing their true colors. I can't. Mm-mm. When they straight up were like, we could just sacrifice them as I'm doing it to protect ourselves. We'll just sacrifice this little area. I'm like, oh my God, the cruelty. At least Nesta called them out on that shit. Let's get into the foreshadowing and world building part of the episode. Starting off, the main thing that I noticed was that like when they were doing the whole preparation for meetings, the queens were asking very specific questions about the exact geographical location of the house, the layout, the size, where the doors were. And Asriel and Nesta and Elaine like literally just provided them with the information because they were trying to set up this meeting. So they had to extend some trust. And while we know Ianthe is the main one who betrayed them and sent them to the King of Hybern or whatever, or gave them where they were, they literally gave the queens who were also working with the King of Hybern that information, and not just where they were, but like how many fucking guards are there, how many the doors, where they spend the most time, where the furniture is. If I was trying to break in and kidnap somebody, they gave them the plan to do that, unfortunately. And that was something that like I just noticed for the first time. I was like, damn, these bitches not only probably sold out Velaris, but they knew everything. They knew everything about the Archeron sisters and their like where they were and all of that. So it was really interesting.
I'm over here. Damn, Nesta and Elaine technically got kidnapped twice because they got kidnapped by King of Hybern, and then Elaine gets kidnapped again by the King of Hybern, and then Nesta gets kidnapped by like the Bloodrite people.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Like, damn, what the fuck.
It's a lot of kidnapping going on in this series.
Seriously,
Feyre also got kidnapped. It seems to be a running thing
like, multiple times
in the Archeron family. Is this a link that we should know about? Hey,
okay, but I will say even okay, ew, I can't even say this. Even if it's Tamlin that comes and like kidnaps me, as long as I get to the Fae lands, whatever.
Tamlin can't kidnap me. He can't. But Lucian can come kidnap me.
Oh, hell yeah. What's up?
I'm Lucian, like, oh my God. Come get your girl. But Tamlin, stay your ass at home.
Hey, Lucian, who's Elaine? You don't need her.
Yeah. No, if Lucian shows up, I'm going to be like those girls, the dark romance girlies that are like trying to get kidnapped or whatever. I'm going to be them. But
you're like, oh, you're here to get me. Oh, how terrible.
Oh, God, I can't believe I'm being kidnapped. Oh. Yeah, exactly. I love that fucking meme.
Wait, but, you're gonna handcuff me? No, don't. Okay.
Please don't.
Okay. Anyway, moving on. Yeah, sorry. We're in a silly, goofy mood today. So, really big foreshadowing happens when the queens show up, and there's only five of them. And Feyre and Rice aren't there, six of y'all. And they're like, oh, the sixth one couldn't show up. And we know that's Vasa because she's actually the good one who ends up helping them. But she's currently in a fucked up situation. But it's okay. She's going to get saved. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. But anyway, I thought that was interesting. I was like, oh, like Vasa wasn't there because she's a bad bitch and she knows that her sisters suck.
Yeah. And they do suck. And yeah, she's going to end up on an episode of The Real World living with Jurian and Lucien in a fucking tiny house.
I'd watch it.
Please drop the novella. Give us the novella the people want.
If anyone has a fan fiction, let us know.
Well, I'm sure they're out there. I'll get to searching.
This is going to be an info fucking dump. In chapter 41, we get a lot of information about who Miriam and Draken actually are. I went in hard with this. Here I go. With Mary and Draken info dump, this is what happens. Rhysand says 500 years ago, there was a Fae kingdom in the southern part of the continent called the Black Land. It was a realm of sand surrounding a river. Humans born there were slaves to the Fae. The queen of the Black Land makes Amarantha seem sweet. This bitch, we don't know her name, but I would like to know her name. Miriam was half fae, half human. Her mother was a slave, so she was also born into slavery. The queen of the Black Lands gave Miriam as a wedding gift to her betrothed, Draken, who was a foreign fae prince. He was really disturbed by getting this gift from his fiance, and he ended up letting Miriam free. She fled from the lands, and she ran into Jurian. She became his lover and joined his rebel army, and she also was a healer. A battle found her tending to Jurian's new allies, who ends up being Prince Draken's army. Oh, full circle moment. She ends up tending to Prince Draken, and she opened his eyes to how terrible the queen is. He ends up calling off his engagement to her. He ends up allying with the humans and was in search for the beautiful girl he freed this whole time.
Stop.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Jurian was not aware of this blossoming love between the two because he was so focused on winning the war. Bryson says he was obsessed with the war, so he did not even notice that his girlie was falling in love with this prince. Mm-hmm. Moore says that Miriam cut it off with Jurian before even laying a finger on Draken, but he still wasn't aware of it at all. When Amarantha killed Jurian and kept him in her ring and necklace, she would tell Jurian about how Miriam left him for a fae and probably the worst torture for him ever. Everyone has assumed that Miriam and Draken had died in the war, but they actually didn't die, and it was part of their plan to get away. They fled to an island where they now live in secret. They rule over it where both humans and fae live together.
Oh, how cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, their story's kind of wild, bro.
It's a lot. I'm still getting the gist of it, but it's a really like small side story, but it actually matters so much to the world building because Miriam and Draken come into play so much later on. And we still, I feel like, need to know a little bit more about them. Mm-hmm. But basically, in these chapters, Rhysand tells the queens that they are alive because everyone knows who Miriam and Draken are. They are the half-fae and the human who fall in love, which they're not supposed to do. And it's just, wow. Like, now they built their own kingdom, basically, where humans and fae can coexist together and be friends. And it's not, like, this fucking war between them. It's possible. So that's why Rice ended up telling the queens about it, because they need to know that it is possible to be allies.
It's a dark backstory. Not surprisingly, there's a lot of dark stuff that actually goes on in these books when you read between the lines. A lot of throwaway lines that are like, oh, this person was a slave, or this person was violated, or this person was blah, blah, blah. And it's just, it's very dark. Like you said, I almost want to know more about it. I would almost be down for the spinoff series of it, like their story, because it's just, of course, I would spend more time in the SJM universe, but it's just, it's so interesting. These characters like that she introduces that are have like their own stories and their own lives, and just the whole fact of the Seraphim and how they're these flying aerial badasses that are just like the Illyrians, but like almost counterparts to the Illyrians. And Miriam being the half human, half fae, but she wasn't blessed with the long life of the fae, so she gets made with this magical object. And it's just, I don't know, like, what? I want to know more about their story. I want to know more about them. But obviously, we do get to learn a little bit more about them in A Court of Wings and Ruin. And we will talk on that more when we get there. But even still, with what we know about them from that, I still have questions. I still would like to know. And it's just the whole Miriam falling in love with Durian, and then Durian being this psycho who murdered Amarantha's sister in cold blood. Trust me, I don't give a fuck about Amarantha. I don't have any feelings lost for her. Fuck her. But what Durian did to her sister was fucked and was kind of crazy. He is a crackpot. And even Durian, I don't dislike him. Where we are in the story, like later, like obviously where we are now, I'm not a fan of him, but where we end up with him, I don't necessarily dislike him, but it's like, bro, what were you doing? It's crazy. And so I don't know, but yeah, no, we definitely get like a lot of information. Obviously, I still have more questions. I can't wait to do our reread of Court of Wings and Ruin so I can like get even more into it and remember all the stuff that was going on with them. But also, go Draken. This is crazy, but it reminds me a lot of the whole, this is the second time I've talked about the Prince of Egypt. I feel like it might be because she's like Jewish. Maybe these alignments are there. But like, this is giving the Prince of Egypt, where it's obviously not exactly the same, but the slaves, and then she gets gifted, or he gets gifted a slave, and then he decides to let her go because he sees it as wrong, and then he ends up finding her later and they fall in love. That's literally happens in the Prince of Egypt. I'm just like, the parallels, I wonder if if she was inspired at all by, not necessarily that movie, but just like the story of Exodus, so like Judaism in general, a lot of parallels there. Since we're talking about some deeper, darker themes that are running in ACOTAR, the line when Feyre's giving her performance on the throne and she's dancing on Rhys reaches down and he's been touching her this whole time. He like gets a little bit higher up on her leg and he basically feels that she's wet and she's like embarrassed about it at first. And there's no need to be embarrassed. It's fine. It's just your body reacting. And in the theme of dark themes, it's such a sad line because you think like he's just comforting her, like, oh, it's fine. It's just your body reacting. But then you realize the deeper meaning of all the times that Rhys probably had to tell himself that same thing when he was maybe physically turned on or he was like maybe experienced pleasure at the hands of Amarantha, even though what she was doing to him was assault and was not like, okay. And in real life, not to get too heavy on things, I'm not a psychologist or anything like that, but I do know that that is something that happens and that victims struggle with. And it's just such a deep, really thoughtful line that he says, where it's just, it's not your fault. It's okay. It's just your body reacting. And so obviously we do know that she's more than a little into him at this point. And so with them, it's not really a question of whether she's okay with it or not. But just in general, I just really stopped and thought, damn, I wonder how many times Rhys had to tell himself that because of what he was experiencing with Amarantha under the mountain. And so moving on to some world building, I do have a bunch of world building actually after this. One thing I did want to mention though, before I even get into Starfall, is that I forget who it was that said it. I think it was Morgan, but she mentions that Starfall disturbs Amarin. So when we were talking about the whole earlier alluding to whatever, when we find out that Starfall is actually the passing of spirits traveling from one place to another and not actually stars shooting across the sky, it's really interesting that specifically disturbs Amarin. I wonder what it is about the traveling of spirits that makes her uncomfortable. I don't really have an answer for it, but it's something that piqued my interest when I read it. I was like, huh, I wonder why that is. If she's an angel, especially the angel of death, I wonder if that has something to do with the afterlife. I don't know, but it's just really interesting for me to think about like where my head goes when I think about like why she would be bothered by something like that. But yes, for some world building, Starfall is technically a celebration of Ninsar. It's only practiced in the Night Court. It consists of spirits that appear like stars, making a yearly migration to somewhere. They don't really know where. There are thousands of them that journey all night, but Reese says the last time he witnessed starfall, there was less of them. So we know it's been 50 years since the last starfall he was at before this starfall. So who's to say if there was less of them back then, who's to say if they're lessening every single year, because he hasn't been there to experience it. But it's interesting that he noticed that there's less and less spirits traveling every single year. And then also he says that it was like back in the day, their ancestors, without like any knowledge, thought that they were literally shooting stars like flying across the sky, which is why it's called starfall. But in more recent years, they've discovered that it's literally spirits making this journey from one place to the other. And they come back every year, the same spirits making the same journey over and over again, except now there's less of them. So really interesting line there. And then finally, we get some world building about more. Ellie, you touched on a lot of this like earlier, so I'm not going to get too far into it. But basically, in chapter 44, I think it is, when they're actually at, Moore goes up to, or Feyre goes up to Moore and is asking her about what really went down with Cass and Moore. And she tells her, like, she was 17. She went to spend time with his family. She met both of them. She knew that she wanted to lose her maidenhood to the greatest Delirian warrior. And she waited until Reese and Az left and purposely had sex with Cassian. And it caused, like, this huge rift between Rhysand and Cass and Az, because Az was just as pissed as Rhysand, but he was willing to let Rhysand do like the physical damage because it's Rhysand's family or whatever. But Rhys wasn't even upset that they did it. He was more upset because he knew what it was going to mean for her, what her family was going to do to her because she did this. And it was just really interesting. They said that basically they've never had that big of a fight between the three of them since then, and that nothing has ever happened between any of them since then. Cass still wants her, but he just basically wants something he can't have. Like, he's not really interested in her like that. If she threw it his way, he'd accept, but he's not pining after her or anything. Like Azriel is. So, yes. And then finally, last bit of world building that happens in these last couple chapters here. We find out about the Blood Rite. This is not only world building, but it's also foreshadowing for big events that happen in Silver Flames. The Blood Rite is literally an Illyrian trial where you go unarmed into the mountains. No siphons or magic are allowed, and your wings are bound. You have no supplies or clothes, just the clothes that are on your back, and all of the Illyrian males who are trying to become warriors participate. We know that changes a little bit in Silver Flames. Hundreds of them go in. Not everybody makes it out. Rhys, Az, and Cassian won theirs, despite the fact that they were separated on purpose by the people who ran the Blood Rite and preyed upon by the people that were participating because they viewed them as the strongest. They all fought their way until they found each other, and then they climbed Ramiel together. So we get that little history there. And then finally, we get the huge Tamlin and Rhysand history. Again, I did touch on this a little bit during the chapter summaries, but the long story short is that Tamlin and Rhys were friends. Rhys trained Tamlin. Tamlin found out during one of their sessions that Rhysand was supposed to be meeting his sister and his mother. And he went back to his court and told his father and brothers, Tamlin's dad, who was jealous of the fact that both Rhys and Tamlin were actually stronger than him, wanted to prove himself. And so he set out to kill Rhys along with Tamlin and his brothers. But when they got there, obviously Rhysand wasn't there because he had decided to stay back at camp, and they decided to kill Lauren and Rhysand's mother anyways. And then not only did they kill them, but they cut off their wings and literally displayed them in the study in the spring court. And Rhys is like, I'm surprised you never saw them in there, which is brutal. I think we do find out later that Tamlin did have them moved, but he still has them. He just doesn't have them displayed. And Rhys and his father retaliated, obviously, by infiltrating the spring court and killing literally every single person in Tamlin's family. Rhysand's father would have killed Tamlin, but Rhysand literally stopped him. He was tired of the bloodshed. He did care about Tamlin. Like, they were friends. friends, like I said. And so I think that to a certain extent, he didn't want to see, he almost viewed Tamlin like a younger brother because Tamlin was younger than him and he had helped train him up to this point. So I think he wanted to spare his life, but Rhys's dad was like on a war path. He'd already killed his mom, even though he said he wasn't going to do that, that there was no honor in it, did it anyways. And as he goes to kill, and when he opens the door, Tamlin's already standing there, slices him, kills him in one blow, and Rhys just runs. And that is where they left their relationship and how we got to the point we are now. Feyre comes in, wrecks both their worlds.
I was just going to say about Tamlin and Rhysand's history, Tamlin's probably like, dude, this guy keeps showing up in my life.
Seriously, but also, fuck you. Like, this is your fault. You betrayed me, bro. You betrayed me. You literally told your punk ass dad and brothers where my mom and sister were going to be and got them killed. And then had the audacity to have their wings displayed in your fucking living room like they were some goddamn picture or something. I can't. I have no sympathy for Tam. I have no sympathy for him whatsoever. He was young. He didn't know better. He was afraid of his brothers. His family was shit. So he was afraid of them. But even still, I'm just like, how are they going to know that if you don't tell them? I have such a hard time trying to picture in my head how that conversation went down. Because it's, did his dad just go, oh, I need you to tell me where your stand is going to be? Like, you could lie. There's so many other options. Like, why did you tell your shitty ass brothers and father all of this information? To this person who like took you under his wing, helped you, trained you, was a brother to you when your own family sucked ass. I don't know. I don't like Tamlin. I don't care. It was funny when Feyre was like, he was probably upset when Rhys showed up, like, or she was saying something like Rhys was probably like super happy when he got to interrupt the marriage or whatever. And I was like, yeah. And she was like, he actually saved me. And I was like, exactly. He actually saved you. All right, guys, I'm sure there's going to be more for us to say about Tamlin as we continue on in this series. There always seems to be, but that is the end of our world building and foreshadowing section. If you are still with us, this is your warning that if you have not read all of the books in the Sarah J. Maas universe, that we will be touching on them now, including House of Flame and Shadow, her most recently released book. If you are not all the way caught up on all three series, we have enjoyed having you so far, but this is your sign to leave and join us in the next episode, okay? All right. Bye, guys. All right, if you are still with us, we are going to go ahead and get into some of our theories and connections now.
There's a lot we need to talk about in this section, but I want to start out with something that I caught when I was doing my chapter summaries. I was like, wait, I feel like this is might be important because it's giving me a little, ooh, what does this mean? Mm-hmm. So remember when I was talking about Miriam and Draken? They had this whole world building thing that Rhysand just like info dumped on Feyre in these chapters. So I was like, okay, let me just rephrase everything super quick. So 500 years ago, there was a fae kingdom in the southern part of the continent. Southern part of the continent, okay? Where else is there a southern part of the continent? It was a realm of sand. Who? Surrounding a river. I don't know what the river part is. But Miriam, I have questions about this fucking bitch. She was a healer, okay? She was a healer. Interesting. So I'm over here thinking, okay, is it, like, I don't think that the southern continent and ACOTAR literally is the southern continent in Throne of Glass.
Right.
But it's just like the southern continent, the sand, the healers. Got me going, okay, interesting. But then I was like, okay, maybe Miriam comes from the southern continent of Throne of Glass because she's a powerful healer. She also is described as having long, dark, curly hair. She has honey brown skin and brown eyes, okay? Who else do we know that looks like that? Literally Irene.
Yeah, literally. She has lighter hair. Like Irene.
And I'm like, she also isn't fae, technically. She was born a human.
She's half like, fae, but yeah, okay.
Right. And I'm like, okay, Irene, like the people that come like from the southern continent in Throne of Glass, there aren't fae either. They're actually human. So I'm like, okay, there's a lot happening and I don't know what it means. But I feel like it made me think about Irene and just Throne of Glass. And I was like, wait, what if Miriam actually is potentially a descendant or someone who comes from Throne of Glass?
Interesting. I don't see her being from the Throne of Glass worlds. That would be crazy. If anything, it would make more sense if her mom was, or if the slaves themselves came from there and she was like a descendant of that. If there was some sort of migration where the slaves that were the slaves of this queen had somehow come from there and they migrated.
It would make sense if her mom's line maybe comes from
Throne
of Glass somehow. Because we do know, obviously, that there was a time where people from Throne of Glass did come into the ACOTAR and Crescent City worlds. So I'm just wondering if maybe people from the Southern Continent who did have the healing powers from Throne of Glass came into ACOTAR, and maybe that's what Miriam's healing powers come from.
Like maybe her generation. Because I mean, I already believe that people that either the Taurus Esme, like that people from there or people that possess that knowledge, like have already been in the story, because the whole like comparing the House of Wen library to a womb and just like the priestesses and the other different comparisons that just are so striking between the Taurus Esme and like the library beneath the House of Wen. I don't know. That is really interesting. I don't know if necessarily Miriam herself, trying to think of like timeline wise, if that makes sense, especially if she was the half human daughter, half fey daughter of one of these fae that were ruling with this evil queen at the time. I definitely have a lot more questions about the queen, because I feel like it's just like really interesting that she's not mentioned like by name or any description about her. It's just that she was this powerful fae queen that had these slaves and stuff. Very interesting. So yeah, you might be onto something, girl. That is quite a connection there.
I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I was like, wait, I don't know. I feel like it might come into play later, because we do know that we probably will get Miriam and Draken a little bit more in future books. So I'm like, okay, we might learn a little bit more about Miriam. Another thing about Miriam is that there's another object that hasn't been revealed that actually made her. So there's a quote from Akawar, and it says, quote, "Miriam died, a spear through her chest during the last battle at the sea," Rhysand explained. "She bled out while she was carried to safety, but Draken knew of a sacred hidden island where an object of great and terrible power had been concealed, an object made by the cauldron itself, legend claims. He brought her there to Cretia, used the item to resurrect her and make her immortal, as you were made, Feyre." Okay, so I'm like, what the fuck is this made object that comes from the cauldron that was able to make Miriam? And obviously it's not as powerful as the cauldron, knowing that it does come from it and it wasn't able to actually make her fey. It just, or like full on high fey. It just made her immortal. And I'm like, what the fuck is this object? And I feel like this object might come up again more in future books.
Yeah. I feel like if it's been mentioned, the chances of it showing back up are high. Technically, the Dread Trove were all not technically as powerful as the cauldron, but super important. And when used together, obviously super powerful. Same thing with Truth Teller. And the knife. Thank you. The Star Sword. I'm like, oh, I can never think of the name. The Star Sword. But yeah.
It's just interesting. I'm like, okay, we don't know what that object is. And we know that it's not part of the Dead Trove, like the four pieces, because we end up learning that obviously the horn is the missing piece.
Right.
So I'm just like, okay, so there's another object out there that can make people.
We know there's several made objects, though. It's just interesting that it's like, what? Because Ataraxius technically made, too, by Nesta. But it is just interesting. What? How did it get there? How did Draken know about it? How did it have the power of resurrection, basically, and granting immortal life? What is it?
What the fuck is the sacred hidden island? Do you think that could be the missing dust court? I don't know.
I don't think so, because I wouldn't think so, because I would feel like he would have said the prison island. They've always referred to it as the prison island. I can't see him. And then obviously, like, they called it Cretia, right? Or Cretia.
Yeah.
So it has.
Okay, it does have a name.
It has a name. So I don't know. But it's definitely not on any maps, I don't think. But neither is the island where they go to hide. I'm wondering if that's the island that they end up hiding, where they end up hiding the cauldron as well eventually.
I just looked this up. Actually, Cretia, could be pronouncing this wrong, is actually the island that Miriam and Draken's people went to live on. Crithian. It's their island.
Yeah.
Okay. So that means that Draken knew about this island and he knew there was something super powerful there. And that's the island he ended up living on and making this kingdom, basically. Huh. Interesting. The fuck?
So it would make sense if that's the island that they went to live on because it's hidden from the rest of the world. That's the whole purpose of it. But also it's obviously very powerful as well because it was able to hold the cauldron. Now that's where they've hidden it. And B, it had this made object that granted Miriam long life.
I have a lot of questions about that place. I'm going to keep my eye out for more information about their island.
Yeah.
Since we got to these chapters, we have to talk about Starfall because there are a lot of theories about Starfall.
I'm sure. And I have questions about Starfall for sure. Like, what the fuck is this journey?
Okay. I just picked out two of the most popular ones, theories that I have seen about Starfall throughout the fucking last year and a half. The first popular theory about Starfall is that the stars who hit Rhysand and Feyre are actually Rhysand's mom and sister.
Yeah, that's so cute. That's
so precious. I want this to be true so bad. I really hope this isn't just a theory. I think that would be the cutest shit ever. But part of me is I want all these things to happen, but they can't happen together.
Right.
Because I want the stars that hit them to be his mom and sister, but I also want them to actually be alive.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
I'm like, damn.
Yeah. I don't think that Rhysand's mom and sister are alive, if I'm being 100% honest. I think that is wishful thinking on a lot of people's parts. I know that's a very common theory, but I just cannot see Tamlin's dad saying that he killed them, cutting off their wings, displaying them in his study, and that they're still alive somehow. I would love it if that was, especially Lauren. I know that more people than anything that they think that the mom might be dead, but Lauren might be alive. I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and be it's not true, because I don't know, obviously, but I don't know. I just have a hard time thinking that this whole group of people got together and agreed to cover this up and make it seem like they killed them when they didn't really do it, especially knowing that it literally caused their deaths. Who's willing to sacrifice themselves for that? Tamlin's family are evil sons of bitches. It's not like Tamlin killed them and then was like, oh, by the way, they killed your mom and sister. That would make more sense if one person was covering up the truth. But for all of the brothers and Tamlin's dad to be like, we killed them, cut off their wings and displayed them, but they're still somehow alive, unless it's some alternate universe type shit. I don't know. I just, as sad as it is, and as much as I would love for them to still be around, just don't see it being possible. It is interesting, though. I would be curious if the stars were somebody else who died in the past, who's who would benefit from Rhys and Feyre ending up together. If not, it would be, I think that the mom and sister are actually super cute and a good call. That could definitely be possible. I could see that happening. Wouldn't it be cute if it was Aelin or somebody who would benefit? Because I'm trying to think, Aelin saw them pregnant on the mountain. So she needs that to happen. So it would make sense if passed on way before in the future when she goes back, but she needs to nudge them together because she needs them to work out. So whoever it is obviously has a vested interest in them becoming a couple, I'm thinking. Because otherwise, why go out of your path to sacrifice yourself on this migration this year to specifically nudge them closer together? Because it's not they hit them and then continued on their path. They hit them and then they went out of orbit.
Hinged theory time.
Uh-huh.
This doesn't make any fucking sense. What if... Stay with me. What if the stars who hit Bryson and Feyre are actually the two fairies that she killed under the mountain?
Whoa. Whoa, okay. Because
it would make sense if it's a migration every year. I'm like, okay, they died that year. Mm-hmm. And what if it's almost a way for them to be like, I forgive you, Feyre, and I see that you had to do this in order to save the world. And this is us trying to put y'all together because we know that y'all are going to be the ones who end up ending the King of Highburn, who's what caused this. I don't know. Literally any fucking sense. Probably not true. But I'd be okay. That'd be a full like circle moment for her if she ever, if that was true and she found out. That would like, heal her so much because, you know, she obviously struggled so much with the fact that she had to kill those two fairies. She hated doing it. She didn't want to do it.
Right.
But she literally had no fucking choice. So
yeah. But to be fair, the second girl did already tell her. She already told her, just do it. The first guy was really scared and that was fucked up. But the second girl was like, just do it. Stab me, because like she realized the sacrifice she had to make. But also, I do think that would be cute and I could see where your mind is going with that. But I don't know if that would be like the best way to do that without Feyre even knowing it was her, because it's like, how would she know that this was your way of forgiving them? But I could see it genuinely being somebody who has a vested interest in these two people ending up together.
Mm-hmm. And that's probably why.
And with souls,
probably is Rhaeshyn's mom's sister.
But why they don't? They also don't technically have a vested interest in these two being together. It's cute, but how does it benefit them in any way? I'm not saying it's not possible, because I do think that's a reasonable explanation, just because it's all, we want to see you happy and in love and with your mate. But my mind was going to somebody who, like, Aelin needs them to be together. She needs them mm-hmm. to be on that mountain when she falls through the worlds. Otherwise, she doesn't get slowed down and she doesn't make it back to her own world. So right. Only I can think of right now who needs them to be together, needs the whole their journey to work out. I'm trying to think of who else. Nyx, but Nyx isn't dead. This is a passing of all souls ever, I can't think how that. And then I was also trying to think of who from the Crescent City world could need them. But since we know Crescent City is technically happening at the same time, it just makes the most sense that it would be somebody from Throne of Glass or Rhys's mom and sister. I totally think that they're a viable group, duo, for to be the people that are sacrificing themselves. But I just think that it's interesting to think that it could be Aelin and Rowan. And it could be like Aelin did it and then Rowan was like, I'm not going out without my girl, and just sacrificed himself too. But it's just interesting because technically, if you think about it, is it a sacrifice? Do they get to go on the journey the next year? Did by jumping out of the whole migration, did they just forfeit their trip this year? I don't know. I have questions about this.
No, we don't know. I have a lot of questions about Starfall.
Yeah.
And then that brings us into, forget everything we just said, theory number two. So another theory is that the Starfall spirits are decreasing every year because of the Asteri enforcing Second Light in Crescent City. So with that, it's the reason why the spirits are decreasing is because the souls and right now are being held in the Bone Quarter instead of migrating, because the Asteri are using literally the fucking dead people in Crescent City to make this fucking Second Light, which they like feed from. So that's a theory that's pretty popular now with Crescent City coming out the last few years and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I like that theory, actually. It makes a lot of sense. There is a reason that the spirits are decreasing. That's one thing I'd be willing to bet money on. She didn't just throw that in there for no reason. You know what I mean? She didn't just mention that because to just throw it in there. It didn't make any sense for Rhys to just be like, oh, and by the way, the last time I was here, I noticed that there was less spirits. That means something. Yeah. What does it mean? I don't know. This is a good theory, because we already know that regardless of what the Asteri actually are, we do know that they came from this world. They came from Prithian. That's one thing that has been confirmed. So if somehow their version of the afterlife is tied to Prithian, it would make sense that if they're consuming these souls, that there's less of them to make the migration every year. That would make sense. And then it really has me thinking, of who in Crescent City the two stars could be. But at that point, because it couldn't be Reese's mom and sister if it was the Bone Quarter people.
It can't really be anyone that we know of, really, that's died in Crescent City, because all of the people that technically die that are friends with Bryce, like, she sees again, and they're, like, free, pretty much.
And so that's after this happens. I feel like our last few theories have been fucking crazy, but it's just because there's so much going on. There's so much going on in these worlds.
There has to be some, doesn't have to be, but like you said, it does make sense if they're just decreasing because of the Asteri using Second Light now. What the fuck? And also, it's like, why can you only see Starfall in the Night Court? Like, you can't see anywhere else in Prithian except for the Night Court. So I'm like, is it just because it's Night Court, maybe?
No, I would think it's because there's a tie-in there. There's either a portal or something, some connection there. There's a reason that they celebrate it. But
there is questions of portals in the Night Court, because obviously most of the, all of the portals, not all of the portals, but a lot of the portals that we do know about that happen in House of Flame and Shadow literally happens in the Dusk Court, which technically is part of the Night Court.
I was just about to say the Dusk Court.
That's really where, like, that's really where Selena and Helena literally were at the portal in the prison. And then there has to be some type of magic that makes the Night Court more of a portal, because that's where Bryce ends up. That's, she leaves from the Dusk Court.
We also know that the Island of Avalon literally is the Dusk Court, because when Bryce is going through the tunnels underneath, it's literally the same exact journey that she took, that was the journey from the Night Court to the Dusk Court. So they're connected. Right. Like, these two worlds are connected in parallel. More than just, and that's another reason why I wonder if there's like a parallel between the Aurelia thing too. This is off the wall crazy. Okay. Amarin, right?
Okay.
Amarin doesn't attend Starfall because it makes her uncomfortable, right?
Right.
What if Amarin is consuming these souls too? What if, this is fashion crazy, but what if Amarin is in some way part of the reason why there's still a, like, that there's less spirits? Like, what if she's not at the top of at Starfall doing what they're doing, but she's doing something to, like, I don't know. Like I said, consume spirits. She doesn't eat regular people food. She's the angel of death. What if? I don't know. Or this is even that shit crazier. But what if she's like a hidden Asteri?
I was about to say that. She could still be angel per se. Like how, okay, oh my God. Okay, because we know the Sarah J Maas says that Amarin is technically a fallen angel. Okay, what if she's, like, a fallen Asteri? Because, oh my God, okay, this sounds fucking crazy. I'm trying to put pieces together in my head as I talk. What if she's, like, a fallen Asteri who still has to feed on some type of light that is a power source?
That's what I'm saying.
An Asteri.
She literally...
fucking old. Because
she's
right now,
so old. She's older than the Asteri that went... Or she's at least as old as the Asteri that went over there. And she ended up imprisoned. And she's conveniently missing during Starfall every year because it makes her uncomfortable.
What if she, like, is the Asteri?
I
who, like, started everything.
I don't see that. But only because she's from a different world. She explained that she had a ruler. So at some point, true. She had okay, somebody so- that she was... beholden to.
What if, okay, what if that ruler is like the fucking Asteri who like started all this fucking shit, and then she was like, this is weird, I'm out, bitch, and she left, and that's why she's like a fallen angel per se, but she still has to feed on other forms of light and like life stuff in order to survive.
I could,
but then
I still think Word is the person that she technically was under.
It makes sense, too, in a way, because...
Doesn't it mean...
When she loses her power in Akawart, like, she doesn't have to feel those stars anymore. And I'm pretty sure, like, the stars, we actually don't know yet if there's more stars next Starfall. What if there is?
Say that one more time. When she loses her powers, like, in Akawar,
when she loses her powers in Akawar, what if that means that next time there's Starfall, maybe there won't be as less stars?
Yeah, that would be crazy, because then I would 1,000% be like, she was feeding on them.
Yeah, but then that also could be because Bryce technically defeated Mysterio. So it couldn't, like, officially confirm either or, but it would be a sign
that something's going on. I don't know. That just popped into my head. I was like, bro, as you were saying this and you were, like, talking about, I was, like, sitting there and I was like, wait a second. Aemryn doesn't attend Starfall. It's just known. Yeah. It makes her uncomfortable. There's something about it that, like, bothers her. She's conveniently gone. There's less Asiri. She's now, granted, okay, here's the only thing that I'm trying to think of. Aemryn's been around longer than Rhys was under the mountain. So it would have he would have had to have noticed. How long before did he notice that the stars were decreasing? But that also applies to the Asiri, because if it was the same year that he went under the mountain, that wasn't long enough for the Asiri to be feeding off people either. They've been feeding off of people for however long they've been over in Midgard, which is longer than 50 years. Aemryn's a little tricky one. I don't know, man. Whatever it is, I know I don't trust her. I don't think she's telling the truth.
I need Aemryn to talk more. Anyway, yeah, I don't know. That was my brain. Every time we talk about our theories, I'm like, whoa, man, my fucking brain hurts.
Starts to go down that rabbit hole. Okay, guys, if you've had fun theorizing these crazy things with us, we're happy that you're still here with us enjoying your time. If you have any ideas on what you think the answers to any of these questions that we've asked could be, let us know in the comments or hit us over on Instagram or TikTok. Let us know there. You can also send us an email, which will also be listed in the description below. We would love to hear from you, love to hear your theories. What do you have to say about it? Which one of these Starfall theories made more sense to you? What do we think about the Miriam and the made object? I don't know. We have a lot of questions, a lot of our own theories, unhinged theories that might actually make sense. It's all fun. So no ideas are stupid ideas. If you have a thought, reach out to us, okay? We would be happy to hear from you. With that being said, we do hope that you guys enjoyed our discussion on A Court of Mist and Fury today. In our next episode, we will be continuing our coverage with chapters 46 through 51. We are getting so close to the famed chapters, you guys. Just a couple more episodes and you'll be hearing me talk all about it. Email or DM us anything that you'd like us to touch on relevant to those chapters. So letting you know, like I said, in a couple weeks, we will be doing our 54, 55 coverage. If you have anything you want to add or anything you want us to know about regarding those chapters, make sure you email us or DM us over on TikTok and Instagram. Finally, again, if you guys have made it this far, if you're still with us, if you're still listening to us ramble on and talk about our crazy theories, then please make sure you give us a review and rate the pod. If you're watching on YouTube, please like, comment, and subscribe. It helps us so much. And if you're not already, give us a follow over on Instagram and TikTok. We are so close to actually reaching a milestone of 1,000 followers over on Instagram. So I want to go ahead and say thank you guys to all of you who have supported us so far. It means the world to us. And we will be doing like a little kind of 1,000 follower giveaway. Nothing big, but if you want details on it and you're interested, make sure you go follow us over there and keep your eye out for the post where we explain the rules and what the giveaway will be. Again, thank you guys so much. We love it here. We love you. Thank you for all your support. We have so much fun doing this and just thanks. Every time we get a message, every time somebody reaches out to us, it just makes our day to hear people even care about what we have to say. It literally is such, I don't know, it's mind-blowing to me. So we want to continue to grow and we just appreciate that you guys have been here with us so far. And that being said, I want to go ahead and leave you guys with a quote as always. The quote today is, many atrocities have been done in the name of the greater good. All right, guys. See you next time. Bye.